This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Pleased to have you with us. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We begin our discussion today with Professor Jeff Saddo, LSU Shreveport Political Science, known for his conservatism and his affiliation with the Republican Party, a guy who has spent time in other parts of the country, has degrees from the University of Oklahoma at Norman, Vanderbilt, and the University of New Orleans. And he joined the LSU faculty in Shreveport in the year of 1991. So 32 years for Jeff Saddo in Louisiana. And good morning to you, sir. Jeff Saddo, can we pull him up, Robin? We are trying to reach Professor Saddo, and I think we have him. There we go. Good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning to you.
Well, we are 20 weeks and a few days away from the finish line, as in October 14th, there will likely be a runoff for governor. And if that happens at this point, it would appear the most likely scenario at this point would be Jeff Landry and Sean Wilson. But as we know, Jeff, much can change in 20 weeks. But is there a realistic possibility for somebody like Stephen Wagusback or Hunter Lundy or some of the others, John Schroeder, who are out there spending money and investing time and have resources, but to this point are not getting in the one or two slot, which is essential to having a shot at being the next governor of Louisiana?
Well, yeah, sure, it's possible. But again, I think you've outlined a scenario here pretty well. It's not likely. I mean, Landry has a lot going for him. Obviously, he's got a ton of money for the campaign. He has got endorsements right and left. News, this things going on in the news. Those are things that events that he can find himself a part of that will aid his campaign. So, yeah, he's got a lot going for him, and I think it would be difficult at this point for any of the other Republicans in the race to surpass him to get in the runoff with the one Democrat in the race, Sean Wilson.
Well, Jeff Saddo, you were known as a supporter of Governor Jindal. And at this point, Governor Jindal remains radioactive in Louisiana. He's not popular, but he was a guy who served 8 years, won two landslide elections for governor. And in this field, who knows, if he were in the field, he would actually have a viable shot at winning. He probably would have a much better shot than Stephen Wagusback does. But Wagusback was his top aide for a while and is not saying much about Governor Jindal. But he has the support here in Baton Rouge of many in the business community. The Baton Rouge Country Club crowd loves him. But is that enough to get him in a position where he could strike lightning?
Well, at this point, no. You know, you point out how he may be popular in that particular area of the state. You know, and this is not unusual. Candidates usually have some kind of regional appeal, but obviously you got to go statewide to win an election like this. And you know, here in Northwest Louisiana, few people have heard of him, and frankly, a number of the other candidates as well. So that's again, that's going to be something that's just going to take a lot of work and money, and you know, the problem that all the Republicans except Landry face at this point is, in a sense, Landry, because of the resources that he has, he can, in a sense, counter whatever these other people are trying to do. So it's going to be difficult, not possible, but it's going to be difficult to overtake Landry for one of these Republicans at this time.
Landry is the darling of the evangelical crowd, but as stated, he's not necessarily the darling of the Brooks Brothers suit Republicans. Is that enough to get him to a runoff with Sean Wilson? And if he's in a runoff with Wilson, is the race over, or does Sean Wilson have a fighting shot?
I think actually one of Landry's advantages at this point is he is willing to put himself out there as a social conservative. I think the other major candidates out there for the Republicans are more hesitant to do so. You know, you do touch on very controversial issues as far as that goes. But you know, one thing Landry's shown throughout his career is he's not afraid to do that. So for a segment of the electorate, he seems to be addressing those concerns in a way that no other Republican candidate is doing. And that's I think that's one of the reasons why I think he's at the head of the field at this point. It will be difficult, regardless of the Republican that enters the runoff. It'll be difficult for Wilson to top that particular candidate. You know, never say never, but certainly the political tides, such as they are in the state right now, that's definitely an uphill battle for even a well-funded and a somewhat known Democrat like Wilson.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. We will go to the phone lines in short order with Jeffrey Dennis Sado, professor of political science at LSU Shreveport. Now, it sounds like, Jeff Sado, that you are favorable toward the Landry candidacy. Do you like him?
I like all the Republicans in the race. I think on the vast majority of issues, they're on the right side of those issues. So, Landry included, I wouldn't be unhappy with any of them being in the governor's mansion, roughly 9 months from now. I'm a satisfied buyer of any of them at this point.
Well, Jeff Landry, he is a guy who's been out there running, and he does have the advantage of having won two statewide offices. He's lost twice in campaigns, as he has noted, once for Congress and against Charlie Bustani, which was not a particularly close race. And he lost to Troy Hebert many moons ago when he ran for the state legislature. But he's learned the process well. He has a very good organization. But there's some others like Richard Nelson, for example, who I think is an outstanding candidate, but is probably the most centrist of the Republicans. All of them at this point indicate they would be inclined to take the money under the Affordable Care Act that Governor John Bel Edwards accepted, that Governor Jindal would not. Is that a good thing, or do you think there's a possibility they might say, no, we don't want it?
Well, Schroeder seemed a little more hesitant, or I guess let's put it this way, a little more willing to revisit the issue. Right now, that particular program has sunk such deep roots into policy in the state. I mean, $350 odd million dollars of state taxpayers' money now going to fund that, and a whole infrastructure that's built up around that. It would be difficult to stop that right now, to reverse that anyway. So I don't see that as something that would that's on the radar. Maybe if we're talking about a second term for the winner who's of a mind to do that, and probably we're going to have to see some changes, policy changes in Washington as well, in terms of that particular program. For there to be any appetite to do that, I think that's probably a ship that sailed. For me and from my analysis, I think that's not a great thing, but that's probably the reality of the situation. So I wouldn't expect during this particular campaign to really hear much about that at all. I just don't think it's going to be an issue.
Patricia Magnolia Woods, let's slide you in before the break with Professor Sado. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering how much Louisiana taxpayer dollars that Jeff Landry spent contesting the election results in 2020 of another state, Pennsylvania. Thanks.
All right. Were there Louisiana taxpayer dollars expended on that endeavor?
I have no idea. You'd have to ask the Attorney General.
Okay, but he has contested the 2020 election. He is a staunch supporter of President Trump, and he has his support, and we'll ask Jeff Sado whether that will help when we return. But we do have another minute before we hit the break. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. morning, Jim. And since this has been brought up, he is a member of RAGA, Republican Attorneys General Association, and they had a big-time part in funding this riot that happened. Republican Attorneys General have been heavily involved in efforts to undermine the result of the 2020 presidential election.
In Louisiana, Phil, I'm not sure that will hurt Jeff Landry with his base, but does he need to expand that base, Jeff Sato, to win the election?
Well, if he gets a runoff, and it's not so much a matter of having to expand the base will expand naturally. So for him and any of the Republican candidates.
Okay, we will get more from Jeff Sato. 877-217-5757, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Lines are open at 877-217-5757. Robin Dow's producing, and Jeff Sato is with us. It's been a little while since we visited with him, but he is always topical, and he speaks from the conservative side of the political spectrum, based in the lovely hamlet of Bossier City, I believe. Don't you live in Bossier rather than...
Yeah. Yeah,
okay, I thought so. You and Foster Campbell.
That's correct, to the chagrin of some Bossier politicians. That is correct.
And Bossier is a conservative place in Louisiana. Foster Campbell, of course, hails from there, and is, through the years has produced a lot of... good things for his home area, but he did not carry it in his last PSC race, and he noted that he was on the same ballot with one Donald John Trump, and it was amazing that he held on to win, but he did. But Donald Trump got well over 80% of the white votes in Louisiana twice, won two elections in Louisiana by landslides, and he has more votes in those two elections than anybody in the history of our state for any election. So Jeff Landry, as a conservative Republican, I can't say I blame him. He's certainly touting his endorsement from Mr. Trump, even though Trump has now been convicted in civil court of sexually assaulting a woman. Does that really matter in Louisiana, Jeff Sato?
Voters here, at least in the last couple presidential elections, have tended to focus on the issues. And, this is a center-right state, and Trump is a Republican and conservative. And so, quite naturally, that's the way that you've seen the state swing about 60-40 both times for Trump over his two Democrat opponents. So, in terms of overall liking of Trump, let's say, I don't think that's really going to make a difference. Now, in terms of voting for Trump, given the other choices that are emerging, even as we speak, that's another matter.
877-217-5757, Steve in Mandeville. Steve, you're on with Jeff Sato.
Yeah, Professor, I wanted to change my question. I want to know, do you believe that we need any kind of changes in the Electoral College, like that you get the percentage of the vote that you win?
All right, that's a national topic. The Electoral College is not reflective of the overall vote on some occasions, twice in the last 23 years, but obviously it's working for people like Donald Trump, who very well could lose the overall vote for a third consecutive time and be elected two out of three times. So is the Electoral College outdated, or does it still have a purpose, Jeff Sato?
No, I've always been a supporter of that. As listeners probably know, it's fairly much an outlier in the world of democracies, where typically where there are chief executives, there's a majority popular vote with runoff typically. So yeah, it's an outlier, but it's a system that if it's we may look at more recent results. Three times in recent decades you've had a popular vote winner not win the presidency. So that for some people that's why don't the thought is, why don't we just go to a popular vote? But the U.S. was founded, you know, by states, and with states' interests in mind. We also have to remember that the Electoral College, you know, looking back 240 years or so now, the way that democracy was conceived in those days, which and it was largely an experimental thing, there were a number of issues that people at the time thought we would have with a system where you had a popular vote select somebody to be the chief executive. So, you know, today it looks a little quaint in that fashion. But, you know, again, the results largely mirror what you see in in a popular vote. And again, you know, you can say that, well, we've got the candidates, they know the rules, they know how the system works and how the campaign is done. So, you know, I even if, say, we went to a popular vote system, I think the campaigns would respond differently to that. And so, for example, Trump may have won more votes if we'd had a system where you campaign
or not as many votes. People find this hard to believe, but Trump got more votes in California than any other state because California is so big, but he lost two landslides in the state of California. But the problem with the Electoral College, among many, is that states like California and New York or in Texas, they're largely ignored, and Louisiana, because we know that Trump's going to carry the SEC with the possible exception of Georgia, which means 12 states basically are on the board for Trump. Biden, if he runs in 2024, and he says he will, he's got New York and California. And it comes down to just a few states determining who gets to 270. In those states, you can basically count them on one hand or maybe a little more than one hand: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia. Those are the states that are the ones that will likely determine the next president. So that means New Orleans doesn't get any visits from a presidential candidate anymore. We did from 1972 to 2004 when we voted for every winner. We were a swing state then, but Louisiana no longer is. So it's taken for granted that whoever the Republican is, John McCain won here in a landslide too. Whoever the Republican is, he or she will not be campaigning in Louisiana because it's a given the Republican will win, just as it's a given the Democrat will win in New York and California. So the great cities of New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Chicago, that's another one. Illinois is a Democratic stronghold. No Republican's going to win in Illinois. So it's a system that's outdated, should be replaced, in my opinion. I read George Will. He had a good column, his last column, about how Gerald Ford almost won. He lost the overall vote by 4 percentage points, but if he'd gotten 9,000 more votes in Hawaii and Ohio, he would have been the president. And, of course, John Kerry almost gamed the system, too. He lost by 3 million votes to George Bush in 2004, only time in the last 8 elections a Republican has actually won the vote. And Kerry had gotten another 100,000 votes, same number of people who would be in the football stadium in Columbus, Ohio, he would have been the president of the United States. So I hope at some point it will be changed. But as long as it affects one party more than another, and it affects the Democratic Party adversely, it's going to be extremely hard to make that happen. Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, you're on with Professor Sato. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi there. Thank you. But how does a quality Republican candidate like Richard Nelson get more well-known without the money backing? How can that be done? Because, anyway, thank you.
Well, Jeff, a guy like Trump can get free media. He used to, anyway. But how does somebody like Richard Nelson, who, well, I've mentioned how smart our governors have been generally through Louisiana, Republican and Democratic, but Nelson's a really smart guy, and he's a good candidate, but he's got to have resources, and how would he get attention in lieu of having a big war chest?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we live in an age where more than any other campaigns are able to directly communicate with voters, and certainly you can leverage that. But then again, you know, most people are not interested in politics on a daily basis. They pay attention for a little while around elections, and that's about it. So it's hard to make that up. And for him, I'm not sure if I'd call him more of a centrist candidate. It's more like he has some extreme, if you want to use that word, positions on both sides of the spectrum, depending on social versus economic issues. But for Nelson, he's a little young, and he's on just the first term.
He's a year older than Jindal was when he was elected.
Right. Yeah, but I know. But, of course, Jindal is,
I know what you're saying. We do have to take a break, and we'll be back with the erudite Jeff Sado after this. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you aboard for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Have a message from Mary Patricia Ray saying, thanks for noting Foster Campbell's reelect miracle. It was a nail biter. Foster only carried Webster Parish, and he still won. And there are only 5 public service commissioners, so the districts are actually larger than the congressional districts in Louisiana. But in the PSC, we have 3 Republicans, 2 Democrats, which is reflective of the state, as Jeff said, a 60-40 breakdown. But in Congress, we have 5 Republicans and 1 Democrat. So Jeff Sado, is that an example of gerrymandering, or is it just the luck of the draw?
Well, really more luck of the draw than anything else. The problem in districting in Louisiana, at least at the congressional level, is as the 2 court cases have made clear, and I guess they're on hold until the U.S. Supreme Court addresses kind of the Alabama counterpart. But in order to draw 2 districts that even have bare black majorities, would require elevating race as a criterion for that, to such a level that the Supreme Court in the Alabama decision probably is not going to go along with that. And it's just so, for example, if we look at the second majority district that was drawn in the plans that are in front of the courts right now, they end up splitting, depending upon, there's some alternatives, 4 or 5 of the Louisiana's major metropolitan areas into 2, and in one instance, 3 different districts. So, when you start ignoring these other considerations, continuity of representation, and the like, it starts getting very difficult. So, actually, it is kind of a paradox in a sense that you can more easily draw 2. Although, actually, if you look at the PSC districts, there's only 1 minority district out there, but in some ways it is easier to draw these larger districts that way than it is the smaller ones.
Well, in Baton Rouge, our city has veered blue. It is a aberration in Louisiana, but Baton Rouge has gone for Barack Obama twice. It went for Hillary Clinton. It went for Foster Campbell over John Kennedy. You go down the line, and Donald Trump lost here twice by big margins. John Bel Edwards won here twice by big margins. And the city is now big enough that you could have some outlying areas connected to the city of Baton Rouge, and it would almost certainly be a blue congressional district, which then would make it, instead of 5-1, would make it 4-2, which still would give Republicans a 67% majority. And as Jeff said, he's right, it's about 60-40 now. But right now, it's 5-1, and that's not reflective of the state of Louisiana. But Republicans control the legislature, the state legislature, where the district lines are drawn, and the courts, Jeff's probably right, will rule in the favor of what amounts to gerrymandering here, there, and everywhere. And as a result, the state does not really reflect the overall breakdown of Democrats and Republicans when it comes to members of Congress. Albert in North Baton Rouge. Albert, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Sado.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dr. Sato. I just want to say that the argument that you can't draw two majority of black districts is simply false. And legislature was presented with really 8, 9, 10 other proposals, and the majority black districts that were drawn met not just they met far more of the traditional redistricting formulas and criteria than the alternative districts. The Republicans drew a 5-1 split simply because they had the votes. And that's just a bit of bottom line. But the argument that you can't draw two majority black districts in Louisiana is simply false.
It could be done, but the legislature does not want to do it. And in the old days, it probably would be thrown out. Cleo Fields had a district that was thrown out. Jeff, he may have been your congressman for a little while. I don't know, but his district flowed all over the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, no, that's an example. You know, you can, as the caller says, sure, you can do it, but it's the sacrifice of what reapportionment principles. And again, I think what the courts are going to do with the case in Alabama is that it'll decide that there is just so much emphasis being placed upon race for voters to be put in districts simply because they are of a certain race, that's going to override other valid criteria, and that they're going to say that that's just going too far. So yeah, sure you can, but you know, I would disagree with the statement that you can draw those districts in a constitutional way,
well,
at least in the way that's going to be defined.
I saw a district that Senator Fields was touting, and it was contiguous, and it would have affected Julia Letlow rather than Garrett Graves, but that one looked fine to me. It was not like the old Z-shaped district that he had. It would have been perfectly fine. But this is politics, though, and the Republicans have the votes. And as Barack Obama said, elections have consequences. And if you got the votes, you pretty much can muscle your way into getting what you want when it comes to redistricting.
Yeah, well, certainly, there is one solution. If you're dissatisfied with how your state legislature is dividing up your state, there's one solution, and that is vote in different state legislators and vote in a different party as the as the majority party.
Rebel in Sherwood. Rebel, you're on with Dr. Sato.
Hi. Thank you so much, Jim, and thank you, Professor. Professor, I'm trying to decide here, sir, if you're a political scientist expert or a political hack. Let me ask you this. I often hear Republicans claiming that America is not a democracy, but instead a constitutional republic. And isn't that a ridiculous argument? Because isn't a constitutional republic just another form of representative democracy in which leaders are elected by the popular vote?
Well, a republic is a representative democracy. Same thing.
All right. David in Atlanta. Thank you, Rebel. David in Atlanta, you're on with Dr. Sato.
Good morning. Professor Sato, Donald Trump right now, this minute, is being investigated by Jack Smith, the special prosecutor for espionage. He's been civilly adjudicated of sexual assault. He's under 34 felony indictments and so forth. Now, could you possibly vote for such a person who's likely a treasonous?
All right. Okay. Could you vote for Donald Trump? Do you want to handle that one, Jeff? Thank you, David.
Could I? I did in the past. This time around, I don't know. I'm gonna have to look at the field and decide. But in a year from now or whatever, there's going to be more information out about him, about the other candidates. And, at this point, I would consider voting for him.
James in Metairie. Hello, James. You're on with Dr. Sato.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dr. Sato. You know, it seems like the hardcore MAGA Trump supporters believe that only Donald Trump, their political messiah can save America. What I believe is going to save America from the MAGA movement is the youth vote in our country, the 18 to 24-year-olds. They're liberal on social, so-called social issues, abortion and LGBT rights. And even one MAGA operative wants to remove voting machines from college campuses, and one Republican candidate wants to raise the voting age to 25. It is a threat to them.
All right. Well, voters who are younger trend Democratic. Voters who are older trend Republican. But, Jeff, I'm sure you as a Republican are happy that people who are older vote in far larger numbers proportionately than those who are younger.
Well, I'd be happy if everybody would actually vote and take it seriously, do a little research in their voting. But, you know, what two comments to be made here. First, of course, the youth vote is, as you point out, the least likely to turn out in a particular election. So that always tends to modify that impact. But then also, and this is something that, you know, we've observed in my profession decade after decade, stretching back to the 1940s, is that there is a general trend of conservatism as voters grow older. So you'll find, I think it's Churchill, or it's at least attributed to him, essentially says when you're young and you if you don't vote for the left, then you have no heart. But then when you're older and you still vote for the left, then you have no head. So
all right,
this is kind of sums up that progression.
Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hello, Kevin. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to know, how could you vote for a person like this, and how the rest of the world is looking at us like a bunch of clowns? Why don't you baby boomers get out the way? Because that's why they call you baby boomers, because you're the most spoiled generation of all times, and you still think you're John Wayne and Clint Eastwood around here playing these games when China running circles around us.
I'm a baby boomer, too. And Kevin does have a point, but did you take it personally, Jeff?
No.
But Jeff was born in 1962, so he's barely a baby boomer, but he's in there. And those who are born in 46 are right at the front end of the baby boom, and we've had three U.S. presidents, Bush, Clinton, and Trump, all born in the summer of 46. Oh, what a summer that was. We're back with Jeff Satto after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Dr. Jeff Satto with us the full hour. Unfortunately, Lamar White could not be with us today, but he will be soon, I'm sure, and we always enjoy hearing from him as well. But Dr. Satto's going into overtime, and he's got our listeners juiced up. And if you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757, one of our favorite guests. And I saw a listener actually sent me a column from a while ago from Jeff Satto, who still writes columns about politics, and referring to our show as the only radio talk show in Louisiana with a four-digit listening audience that leans left. Jeff, actually, it's five digits. Thanks to the great audience we have, in the last Nielsen book I saw, we ranked third in the market in this time slot, 9 to 10, Monday through Friday. So thank you for being so loyal. Yeah, we've got a great audience, and they enjoy jousting with Jeff. Chris in Goodwood. Good morning, Chris. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. So your guest earlier stated that, you know, as people get older, they tend to turn more from Democrats to Republicans. And that was true in the past. But, you know, that was when people had good paying jobs. There was ability to buy houses. There was a pension. That stuff's really not there anymore. Louisiana doesn't pay people anything. Pensions are gone. Very few people can buy homes. So really, there's more people who are sticking to the left, and it's going to continue to do so. And they're even getting way more left than even most of the people were 10 years ago. Those are my comments.
Well, over time, these people who are in their 70s who vote like crazy, and by the way, they watch Fox News. The average Fox News viewer, by the way, is 71 years old. But they vote a lot, but we're all fighting the clock, and over time, will the country veer more left, or will, as you have intimated, maybe more than kind of, Jeff, will some of these people who are on the left in their 20s become conservative and go to the right like John Kennedy did when they're in their 60s and 70s?
Yeah, that's been the pattern for, as long as we've had the survey research era, so basically going back to the 1940s, the caller does bring up, an interesting hypothesis. It's things change, and certainly we're in an era where, for the first time in living memory, you actually, and when we look at some of the survey data, you have younger people responding saying that they don't expect that their lives will be economically better than their parents, and we see lifespan, and this may be just a bump from the coronavirus period, but lifespan's declining. So maybe that would change the dynamic somewhat, and maybe it would favor one political party or ideology over another. So we can't look at the past trends and always assume that they're going to replicate out into the future. We'll have to see.
Well, we've gone this far without discussing the debt ceiling, which has been the topic of note the last month. And Kevin McCarthy, the speaker, and the president, Joe Biden, who have no love for one another, are actually talking and both seem like reasonable men. Does that mean that there will be an agreement, or could we have some real drama at the finish line, Jeff?
I suspect it'll be an agreement. We keep hearing about how June 1st is this hard and fast deadline. That's probably not the case. There's probably some wiggle room in there, but certainly, sooner rather than later, there would be a problem. Inevitably there's going to have to be some solution. On the one hand, you just don't go out there and automatically raise it, whatever one of the arguments being, we've always raised in the past, let's just keep raising it. But why have the law in the first place if you're going to do that? And of course, on the other hand, you've got to make sure that the U.S. pays its debt obligations. And so I think those realities are going to compel some kind of meeting in the middle, which, according to the old aphorism, no one's going to like. So it's probably going to be at least serviceable.
Stuart downtown. Good morning, Stuart. You're on with Dr. Sato.
Why, thank you, Jim. Dr. Sato, the audience, good morning. Dr. Sato, will you share with the audience, particularly those of you who worship Donald Dump, why he's your messiah, as bombastic and arrogant and disrespectful, and perhaps as ill-informed as he is?
All right, well, I don't think Jeff views him as the messiah, but there are people who are, they're not going to budge. They love Donald Trump. Their minds are made up. Doesn't matter. Trump himself said it, 8 years ago? I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they'd still love me. Jeff, what is this hold that he has? And I mentioned it with Quinn Hillier yesterday. I think this is a phenomenon we have not seen in American politics. He has people who will follow him wherever he goes and will disregard any information that might have sunk other politicians in years past.
Yeah, I'd say certainly maybe the last president that'd be comparable to Kennedy in terms of this this personal connection that people feel, at least some people feel, with Trump. I think because he offered himself as an alternative that many found refreshing, that he's not of, as the term is, the swamp, and that he's willing to do certain things and willing to say certain things that other politicians shy away from, and it's things that that at least some portion of the electorate were hoping that a politician would take a position on or say something about. So to them, he's a very refreshing alternative, one that they haven't seen in anybody else, and so they do feel a special loyalty to him.
Leonard on airline. Leonard, you're on the air with Dr. Sato.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Professor. I predict that Trump is a one-term. But what I wanted to ask you, Professor, are you seriously considering voting for Trump if he was the last one standing, knowing that he's a sexual predator?
Well, let's phrase it in another way. Jeff, you're a Republican. You'll have a chance in a party primary in the spring of next year to vote for a Republican. Will you likely vote for President Trump, former President Trump, in lieu of other Republicans, or will you be shopping for another candidate?
At this point, again, I'm not totally, my mind's not totally made up for any candidate. I will say this, that much of what Trump's done in policy terms has been very salutary. At the same time, and I think a number of Republicans think this way as well, he does, his personality and demeanor sometimes are distracting and can detract from pursuit of that agenda. And there may be other candidates out there that you can get that kind of agenda or something close to but without all the distractions, and therefore they may be more effective in the White House than Trump would be.
Jake in Amite, hometown of Governor John Bel Edwards. Hello, Jake.
Hey, I was calling because President Biden sat around for months saying that he was not going to negotiate on the debt ceiling. And finally, in the past few weeks, he's decided to negotiate. So I wanted to ask you, Jim, in your opinion, does that make President Biden a liar?
No, it makes him a politician. I don't think that makes him a liar, but you are right, Jake. But sometimes people in the process of negotiating, I think Kevin McCarthy has said, too, that he wouldn't budge on some things. But now it looks like both of them are going to budge a bit. And Jeff is right. Neither side will be happy with the finished product. But for the sake of our country, let's hope they get to the finish line. I don't think we want bills to be unpaid by our government. Jeff, what about 2.3 million people in Louisiana voted in the 2020 presidential election, which we knew Trump was going to win? There was no doubt he was going to win, but only 1.5 million voted in the governor's election the year before when we didn't know who was going to win. Why are we so enamored with presidential politics in lieu of a race that arguably is much more important to the people of Louisiana?
Yeah, and you can throw in local elections as well to that. Us political scientists, it's a phenomenon we've studied, and the reason why is that actually really several things, but much more attention in terms of the media is paid to national politics. Of course, it's easier to do that, a lot of the decisions are fairly consequential. Even compared to what happens in state and local policymaking.
Right. Plus, of course, we're short on time, and I know Donna in Mid-City has been waiting a while, as have others, but Donna longer than others. Donna, you're on. You have the final word. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Can you just list for me five policy things that you liked about Trump?
All right. I don't think we have time for five, but what is the biggest, what is his biggest accomplishment?
I'll give you a couple. Fiscal policy, so tax cuts, although not much in the way of spending reductions, as well as a reduction of the regulatory state.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, and thanks for going into overtime. Always a pleasure,
sure.
And thanks for your insights. And how about Trump and the vaccine? He did a great job on that, but takes no credit for it because his base doesn't like it. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, Robin Dow producing, and we're glad you're listening. Thank you so much. Stay safe and stay tuned.